Your voice in the community, the Great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.
On this evening's The Space Show, we celebrate the 55th anniversary, not only of this tune, but also of the event that inspired it.
Trying to hold it, just like you would have held. But this is the face. It's bouncing around, but you can see absolutely clearly this is a man sitting behind a desk. I think he's talking.
From 1962, that was the Tornadoes with their hit tune, Telstar. No matter your age, you are surely familiar with it. Indeed, this tune is so popular that I have 34 versions of it in my record collection. To play them all, the Space Show would need to take over the Purple Haze slot. Familiar that the tune might be, but did you know the story behind the satellite that inspired the hit? These days, it is quite usual for a television news broadcast to make several live crosses to an overseas correspondent to catch up on a developing news story. Even the cash-strapped SBS does it so often that you probably don't notice, let alone give it any thought. But it wasn't always so. Worldwide radio by shortwave began in the 1920s and by the 1960s was commonplace. Submarine cables were able to carry telephone calls between continents, albeit at a high cost. Radio pioneers attempted intercontinental television as long ago as 1930. Sent on shortwave radio from New York to England and Australia, the images were of poor quality. They were discernible, but only as crude blacks and whites, with no grey shades. This was unsatisfactory and of no value. The pioneers gave up. Likewise, sending television via undersea cable proved impossible. Then, in 1957, came satellites. For the general public, the first hint of things to come in was in a newspaper report published on 1962, July 9, and another one on July 10. They said a new satellite was about to be launched and that telecasts across the Atlantic Ocean would be made via it. Then, on July 10, this happened.
Stand by to pick up the count on my mark.
Four separate groups linked by a communication system. Bell Labs Guidance, Telstar Control, NASA's Mission Control, and NASA, Douglas, and Aerojet in the blockhouse.
Launch Director to Mission Director.
Mission Director here.
Will you give me the mission status, please?
The mission is go.
Roger, thank you.
Guidance control, steering checks are complete. The radar is preparing for guidance.
Roger.
Report BTL status.
BTL's ready.
Launch Director, we have received clear to launch.
Minus 50.
Start remote camera number one.
Started.
Close blockhouse vents.
Close. Console, start camera and mic tape recorders.
Camera and mic tape on.
Minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5,
solo fuel
3, 2, 1, 0.
Start.
Tracking. Tracking okay at BTL.
What, 70 seconds?
The launch made headlines around the world. The New Zealand Herald breathlessly stated, Telstar can handle more communications traffic than all the cable and radio channels linking the United States with the rest of the world. The first use of the satellite was to send telegraph messages. Then, the first telephone call was made via satellite. Engineering test telephone calls were made in advance of the first official calls. Here is F.R. Capel, the board chairman of the AT&T Telephone Company, talking via satellite to Vice President Lyndon Johnson.
Will Telstar work? In Washington, D.C., distinguished guests wait and watch expectantly before a large closed-circuit TV screen. Vice President Johnson is there, with Mr. McNeely, President of AT&T, and Senators Kerr and Smith, Congressman Miller, Harris and Albert, Senators Dirksen, Symington, Magnuson, and Pastore, and Administrator Webb of NASA and the Federal Communications Commission watches the show at Andover. The first test is coming up. Will Telstar receive a telephone message from Earth, amplify it, and return it to Earth? F.R. Capel, AT&T board chairman, will speak with the Vice President of the United States. The connections go in.
Good evening, Mr. Vice President. This is Fred Capel calling from the Earth station at Andover, Maine. The call is being relayed through our Telstar satellite, as I am sure you know. How do you hear me?
You're coming through nicely, Mr. Capel.
Well, that's wonderful. Since you're also head of the Space Council, Mr. Vice President, I suppose you followed with considerable interest the activities today which have resulted in this call. The first telephone message in the world, as a matter of fact, over an active satellite.
Indeed I have, Mr. Capel. The progress of the satellite from the time it was launched early this morning from Cape Canaveral by the National Aeronautics and Space Administration has been most gratifying to all Americans. I'm sure millions of them have been proud of this achievement, which is another first in our conquest of space.
Well, I think the people of this country are pleased with this demonstration of cooperation between government and private industry. The teamwork this morning at Cape Canaveral, which I witnessed, was outstanding.
I quite agree, and I think this is a matter of satisfaction for every citizen of the nation. I'm certain that the results of the Telestar test will be most valuable in providing some of the knowledge needed to bring into operations a very fine commercial communication satellite system.
Well, we're most hopeful of this, and certainly pleased at this performance so far. Good night, sir, and thank you a great deal.
That same day, a test television signal was sent from the control station at Andover in the state of Maine. It showed a fluttering flag in front of the dome covering the transmitting and receiving antenna. This was retransmitted by Telstar back to the ground station and was shown on all three television networks in the United States. As Telstar 1 moved out across the Atlantic, the French ground station also picked up the signal. The French television audiences saw a clear picture in the Telstar satellite test. Via the ground station at Goonhilly Downs, British viewers saw a steady image for only a few seconds and received no sound signal. In Australia and New Zealand, the July 12 issues of the newspapers reported these events with banner headlines. Television across the Atlantic. US Telstar satellite opens new era, proclaimed the New Zealand Herald. Underneath the headline was a four-column wide picture of the flag and dome that the Herald had received by radio and wire. The article said that live television had been sent across the Atlantic for the first time, while Telstar was on its sixth orbit. All three United States national television networks showed viewers what happened when scientists at Andover trained their 360-ton antenna on the tiny satellite. First, viewers saw a picture of an American flag fluttering in front of the great 70-meter dome that covers the antenna at Andover. The Herald report noted that these pictures had been intended to be received only in the United States as part of a preliminary test of Telstar. However, they were picked up in England and France. This British and French reception had not been expected.
Then a bonus, a surprise, an unexpected first.
Capture, if they've been on video, we just get an announcement right now. This is the French station has the picture. It's an excellent, clear picture.
You mean we've made an international telecast?
We've made an international telecast.
Well, let me congratulate you.
Then a photograph of Telstar is transmitted to the satellite and sent back to Earth. The first facsimile transmission. Next, two 500-word stories flash from Earth to satellite to Earth. Tape punching out news. Data transmission at over 1,000 words a minute. The following day, Telstar brings a voice and a face from France to the television sets of the United States.
La chanson American television viewers were not particularly interested in their flag fluttering in front of a dome. The sensation was to happen the next day when further tests of Telstar were to be made. On July the 12th, the evening newspaper, Auckland Star, headlines predicted, "New space TV attempt will be made tonight." The next morning, the Herald headline read, "Telstar again links two worlds." A subheadline read, "European TV signals received in the USA." The Herald went on to report that France made the first east-to-west transmission with a series of films with a videotaped introduction. Telstar 1 was on its 15th orbit. The surprise variety program included the singer Yves Montand. Less than 3 hours later, Britain became the first European country to send a live broadcast across the Atlantic. This dull broadcast from England featured three technicians sitting at a console in the satellite ground station. Now, this didn't impress anyone on either side of the Atlantic. What did impress was the unauthorized French variety program. The wonders of Telstar really struck home to Americans at home when people got an instant reception of a singer in Paris. This unauthorized telecast by France prompted talk that France may be banned from an eight-nation television link-up through Telstar. This would be a penalty for having broken the agreement among members of the European Broadcasting Union that individual members would not transmit anything but test cards through the satellite until the program planned for July the 23rd. In the event, France was allowed to participate. On July 18, our Antipodean newspapers reported that the first colour still television pictures had been sent from the United Kingdom to the United States. Telstar's big day came on July the 23rd. While Telstar was making its 153rd orbit, a 20-minute television programme was broadcast via Telstar to Europe. The three American networks, NBC, CBS and ABC, pooled efforts with the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation to make this live production. It was watched by 200 million people in Europe and North America. Here is a part of that historic broadcast.
Good afternoon, and soon we'll be saying good evening to Europe on the first exchange of live programs between the television networks of the United States and their affiliated stations and the European Broadcasting Union, which extends all the way from Sweden in the north to Italy in the south, from the Irish Sea to the Dalmatian coast. To the European broadcasters, this exchange of programs between nations is already a tradition, and they do it very well. Today, we begin in many languages. In a moment, you'll meet some of your old friends in broadcasting who have changed roles to do the foreign language narration. And speaking for Chet Huntley, Howard Smith, and myself, Walter Cronkite, who are speaking in English, our hats are off to them. So we commence in an attempt to catch up with the giant technological step which the scientists of Bell Laboratory and the National Aeronautics and Space Administration have made possible. This is Master Control, New York. Our live transmission to Europe and Eurovision Master Control, Brussels, will commence in approximately 5 minutes, or as soon as Europe confirms its acquisition of our video and audio signal. We shall be transmitting in 7 languages on 7 audio circuits to 16 European countries. We should be telling you that these translations are going to Europe by the normal cable facilities. The picture you'll be seeing in the United States actually has been relayed to the Telstar and relayed back for transmission across the United States on the normal network lines. Now we must confirm that the Bell Laboratory at Andover, Maine has acquisition of the Telstar and that the receiving station at Plumeur-Boudot in France is getting it. And how are we doing, Mr. Welber?
Well, Mr. Cronkite, the satellite arrived at our horizon at about 46 minutes before the hour. Since that time, for the past 8 minutes or so, we have turned the satellite on. It is functioning properly. We are getting the proper return signal from it. We expect the French to see it shortly.
And you will be ready to give us a go-ahead signal as soon as the French do confirm that they're getting the picture.
I certainly will, Mr. Cronkite.
Do you have any estimate how many seconds that may be, or minutes?
That should be very shortly now. I understand that the French tracking system has started to track the satellite, and it should be very shortly now that they should acquire it and be capable of receiving the signals we're transmitting.
How high is the satellite as it relays these pictures shortly?
It's approximately 3,000 miles above the Earth's surface, Mr. Cronkite. Here at Andover, our large horn antenna, which is under the radome, is now tracking it very well. We acquired the satellite with our quad helix antenna, and it is also gathering telemetry for us. We should be receiving word from the French very shortly that they have acquired our signal and are capable of receiving your transmission. I understand now that the French horn, the French antenna,
is starting to track the satellite, and it should not be very long before they are in complete auto track and capable of receiving our signal. I have just received word, Mr. Cronkite, that the French are ready and the program can now start.
Eurovision, we're now putting up our Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor on the left side of our monitor. If you'll please put up your Eiffel Tower in Paris next to it. Now, when you have both the Statue of Liberty and the Eiffel Tower on your line monitor, that, of course, will mean that the circuit is closed, that this electronic bridge across the Atlantic is open. We're going to wait for your signal. If that's been completed, we'll go on that signal.
Hello, Walter Cronkite. Hello, United States. On my television screen here in Brussels, I have on the left-hand side the Statue of Liberty, on the right-hand side the Eiffel Tower. They are both together, it's clear. So go, America, go. Go, America, go.
Good evening, Europe. This is the North American Continent Live via AT&T Telstar, July 23rd, 1962, 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time in the East. The New York skyline on the Atlantic Ocean. And that's the Brooklyn Bridge. On the west, 3,000 miles away, San Francisco. 12 noon at the Golden Gate Bridge, high above the entrance of San Francisco Harbor. The same sun, which has just set over the Mediterranean and the English Channel, has reached its zenith here, but is above the clouds hanging over San Francisco. On the north, one of the longest unguarded borders on this planet. This is Niagara Falls, part of the Canadian-U.S. frontier that extends from New Brunswick to British Columbia on the Pacific. On the south, the Rio Grande River, for 1,000 miles, the only border between Mexico and the United States. Here, the cities of Juarez, Mexico, and El Paso, Texas, touch. Between these two borders, between these two oceans, 180 million Americans have begun another week. We'll visit with some of them in a moment. The plain facts of electronic life are that Washington and the Kremlin are now no farther apart than the speed of light, at least technically. That what goes on in the United Nations building in New York can be seen in Belgrade and in Paris and in Bonn.
Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
Well, you're listening to The Space Show, and we're looking at the 55th anniversary of the launch of Telstar 1. At one stage of the broadcast, they crossed to a press conference being held in Washington by President Kennedy.
In an historic first, President Kennedy's news conference is televised overseas.
I understand that part of today's press conference is being relayed by the Telstar communications satellite to viewers across the Atlantic, and this is another indication of the extraordinary world in which we live. So we're glad to participate in this operation, developed by private industry, launched by government, in admirable cooperation.
Later in the broadcast, astronauts John Glenn and Wally Schirra spoke live from Cape Canaveral. At that time, John Glenn had, 5.5 months earlier, become the first American to orbit the Earth. Wally Schirra was preparing for his flight on Mercury 8 in October.
Our communication satellite, traveling at 18,000 miles per hour, traverses our horizons in only a few minutes, and we want you to see other parts of America on this Sunday or summer afternoon. With apologies, therefore, we leave the presidential news conference and go to Cape Canaveral.
This is Cape Canaveral, where Telstar has now come full circle, for it was from here that she was launched 13 days ago and now is transmitting pictures sent from her port of embarkation. At Mercury Control, we'd like you to meet this country's scarcely ancient but orbital pioneer, Colonel John Glenn.
By now, we have proven that man can perform useful tasks in space. We have also begun to use man as a scientific observer during these flights. The manned flights of today, however, are transitional. They're evolutionary, looking forward to the future. And next year, we should have our full one-day-long missions up. Beyond that, we're looking forward to Project Gemini, a two-man craft, which can stay in orbit for periods of up to 2 weeks. Beyond that, of course, our three-man project of Project Apollo for the moon landing, and Apollo will take us to the moon and back. With communication satellites such as we're using today, live coverage and the information that we gain on these flights can be shared with all of you on an international basis. I would like to introduce you now to our next man in space, Commander Wally Schirra.
Here at Hangar S in the White Room, we're working on the spacecraft for my flight. The flight plan calls for up to 6 orbits, 9 hours in space. The map plot in Mercury Control shows that we've shifted our prime recovery area from the Atlantic to the Pacific, near Midway Island. We have made a number of changes in equipment and quite a few changes in the control circuits. We've installed one switch, for example, to change the high thruster usage, which we've had trouble with in the past, to turn it off while in orbit. In addition, man can control experiments in space. We've removed the optical components of the periscope and installed an ultraviolet device and camera to photograph the air glow layer above the horizon. These photographs will help the world scientists get information about solar energy in our atmosphere and learn more about our universe.
That America to Europe broadcast was followed on the 154th orbit of Telstar by a 19-minute program from Europe to America. It opened with a picture of London's Big Ben clock, then of the Champs-Élysées in Paris, and of the Colosseum in Rome. Viewers saw 9 European countries through 54 cameras. Today, in 2017, that would be unremarkable. But back in 1962, this was a stupendous achievement. 3 days later, on July the 26th, the New Zealand Herald ran the headlines, "More TV is unlikely," and "Telstar must pay its way." The newspaper reported that there were unlikely to be more telecasts as Telstar must pay its way by handling telephone calls and business messages. Now, Telstar could handle 600 two-way telephone calls or one two-way television program. It cannot do both. Telephone calls earn AT&T money, while television does not. We began this program with the tune Telstar by the Tornadoes, an English band. It was produced by Joe Meek and was released in 1962. It was a number one hit in the United Kingdom singles chart and remained in the chart for 25 weeks. Across the Atlantic, it reached number one on the US Billboard Hot 100 in December of 1962. It stayed in the chart for 16 weeks. Well, Joe Meek went on to write lyrics for Telstar, calling the song Magic Star. It was first sung by Kenny Hollywood in the United Kingdom and soon after in the United States by Margie Singleton with the Merry Melody Singers.
Star above, send a message to my love. Tell
From 1962, the United Kingdom's Kenny Hollywood. In late 1962 and 1963 January, from the United States came this version of Magic Star by Margie Singleton and the Merry Melody Singers.
Magic star above, send a message to my love. Tell him that I wait patiently. Sad and so lonely, dreaming of him only. Swift and graceful as a dove, way up above, magic star up high, dancing through the sky. Tell him that my heart cries for joy. Please say that one day I hear his voice say that I'm his one and only girl. As the stars light up the sky and the new moon day, guide his footsteps safe and sound.
The Telstar 1 satellite was built by Bell for AT&T. It was launched and controlled by NASA. Its shape was a 72-sided polyhedric sphere of diameter 86 centimeters. The 76-kilogram satellite was nearly all covered with 3,600 solar cells. The output of its repeater signal was 2.25 watts. Launched on 1962, July the 10th, it ceased transmission on 1963, February the 21st. Its orbital perigee, or low point, was 952 kilometres and apogee 5,632 kilometres. It circled the Earth every 157 minutes, as it continues to do so today, 55 years later, as a silent piece of space junk. Telstar had a huge impact all over Europe. In 1963, the Yugoslavian singer Marjana Dercic recorded her tribute to the satellite.
Okrug sveta, letiš med zvezdami neba. Dekletu, ki čaka, željo izpolni, njen fant šel je v širni svet, pa se ni še vrnil tel star ti, ki krožiš okrog nas in vidiš daljna mesta vsa. Ti ga poišči, ti ga pokliči, reci mu, da čaka nam, da vse dni čaka nam, kot večer strmi mu nebo. Roji zvest trepetajo skozi modri mrak nad menoj in med zlatimi zvezdami meri tel star svojo pot. Zate nič ne ve in zame tiho plava skozi noč. Tel star ti letiš okrog sveta, letiš med zvezdami neba. Čaka, żelio i spomni. Pan tu pio czołję swy, sporoci mien pozdrawi. Meritel star svojo pot, za te nič ne verim za me, tiho plava skoz noč. Tel star ti, letiš okrog sveta, letiš med zvezdami neba. Dekletu, ki čaka, željo izpolni, ki očel je v svet, sporoči njen pozdrav, sporoči njen pozdrav, sporoči njen pozdrav.
Roughly translated, that goes something like, Telstar, you fly between the stars. Well, Telstar 1 was followed by an improved sister, Telstar 2. Launched on 1963, May the 7th, it had a higher orbit. The perigee was 974 kilometres and the apogee was 10,803 kilometres. It went around the world every 225 minutes. This higher orbit allowed a longer period of communication across the Atlantic and, for the first time, a direct television link between Europe and Japan. Now, we have already noted that the main purpose was telephony, not television. Some songs recognize this. In their song, Help Me, Telstar, the G sisters note the way Telstar improved long-distance telephony. Telstar is used to telephonically reunite lovers.
This is Mark Holden, and you're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.
Although the two Telstar satellites heralded a coming age of intercontinental television, it was not until the advent of geostationary satellites like Early Bird in 1965 that it became more than a novelty. The low-orbiting satellites allowed only brief periods of mutual connection between the continents. The geostationary satellites, hovering as they did 38,000 kilometres above the equator, gave 24-hour continuous contact. At first, television links were rare because the expense meant broadcasters could only justify the cost for special events. As more advanced satellites were launched, costs came down to the point that even our own SBS television can afford daily links. Next time you're in Federation Square, look up and see the SBS satellite dishes up on the roof. And how long has it been since you saw the message via satellite splashed across your television screen? It is no longer a novelty or something that needs to be drawn attention to. Yet, tributes in song to Telstar are still being recorded. Here, from 2003, 41 years on from 1962, is Howlin' Wilson with Telstar.
This is Jay. Sorry, the player glitched out.
And we're... Wilson, we have a problem here.
Moving on.
Okay.
Just go to the next one.
Let's then jump to Magic Star.
I thought you weren't going to play them all in once.
Yes, well, that was Magic Star by the Double Four, with the orchestra conducted by Jimmy Haskell. Now we're going to have another try with Howlin' Wilson out of 2003, Telstar. Colonel Elliot and the Lunatics have also done a version of Telstar. Celebrating the Telstar 1 satellite that carried the first transatlantic television in 1962. That was Colonel Elliot and the Lunatics, and you can find more spaced out reggae tunes on the LP Interstellar Reggae Drive, which is on Creole Records. Paddy Lynn also got in on the Telstar act with Tell Me Telstar from 1962. For me,
you have any mercy? How long are you going to make me listen to that? Oh, we've got lots more here. Perhaps Mark Norman, who's doing Purple Haze tonight, will let us carry on into his show.
I really hope he doesn't.
I've got Telstar here by the Kolcsé Pap Uglits from Hungary in 1963. And I've got the Trio Lewis with a harmonica version. I've got the Shadows from Britain. And I've got the Spotniks with Telstar. And there's Frankie Kalin with Help Me Telstar. And the Ventures did a version. Then Rocking to Telstar by Seas and His Skyliners. Another song called Telstar by Leila Holm.
Oh, God, he's not even halfway through.
From Finland in 1963. Leica and the Cosmonauts from Finland in 2001 did a version. And James Award and Les Scarlett did a song called Telstar. And Magica Estrella by Alberto Cortez. Estrella, of course, Spanish for star. And Camilo Felgen from Germany in 1962.
You can't be serious.
And the Latin Quartet and Les Compagnons de la Chanson, Les Crescendos, In Etoile en Plein Jours, and Wishing on Telstar, and it goes on and on and on. This has been The Space Show of Andrew Rennie. Coming up is Purple Haze with Mark Norman.